Disclaimer: some of the topics discussed in this episode could include murder, child abuse, drug abuse, domestic violence, sexual assault, and other disturbing content. Please do not listen if you are sensitive to any of these topics. Hey guys, I know it's been a while, but I'm back, and today I want to talk about Russell Williams. David Russell Williams was born to Christine Noni and Cedric David Williams in Worcestershire, England, on March 7, 1963. Cedric was hired as a metallurgist at Chalk River Laboratories, which was a Canadian nuclear research laboratory, and the family ended up immigrating to Chalk River in Ontario, Canada. His parents divorced when Russell was six, and his mother married Dr. Jerry Sovka. He started high school at Birchmount Park Collegiate Institute in 1978, but left in 1979. Russell attended Upper Canada College, which was an elite private school in Toronto, for his final 2 years. The same school as Paul Bernardo. Rumor has it that they did know each other, being 1 year apart in age. They both took economics. Russell was a prankster and would sometimes lie in wait for hours in order to jump scare roommates. Looking back, this was crazy creepy. Also during this time, he became obsessed with the movie Top Gun. He announced that he was going to join the Air Force. During his undergraduate years, he began his pilot career and took flying lessons at Toronto's Buttonville Airport. After graduating from the University of Toronto with a degree in economics and political science, he joined the military in 1987. Earning his wings in 1990 to his promotion to the major rank and serving as the multi-engine pilot career manager in November 1999, Russell rapidly rose through the Army ranks. He obtained a Master's of Defense Studies from the Royal Military College in Kingston, Ontario, and got promoted to Lieutenant Colonel in June of 2004. He was appointed as the commanding officer of the 437th Transport Squadron in Trenton, Ontario, and went on to hold some prestigious and distinguished ranks within the military. On July 15, 2009, Russell was appointed as the commanding officer at Canadian Forces Base CFB Trenton, Canada's largest airbase. As a pilot of VIP transport planes, he had passengers such as Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, Queen Elizabeth II, and Prince Philip. Williams was decorated for his years of exemplary service and for a tour of duty in the Middle East. Williams was married to Mary Elizabeth Harriman. The couple, who didn't have any children, lived for 13 years in a house on Wilkie Drive in the Ottawa suburb of Orleans. Later, they moved to a home they had built in the capital's Westboro neighborhood. So Russell often spent time at a cottage he owned in Cozy Cove Lane in the village of Tweed, Ontario, which was 53 kilometers from Trenton. On the night of September 8, 2007, Russell broke into a neighbor's cottage while the family was away and took photographs of himself in pornographic poses with a young girl's underwear, some of which he stole, like he took with him. In the months that followed, Williams broke into other residences in Tweed and the Belleville area. Beginning in May of 2008, a whole bunch of similar crimes occurred in the vicinity of Russell's home in Orleans. Williams victimized families whose members included girls or young women, entering residences at night when the people were away or sleeping. In some cases, he made return visits, and sometimes Russell walked in through unlocked doors. Other times he gained entry by cutting a screen, forcing a window open, or picking a lock. During the burglaries, Russell took photographs of women's underwear spread out on a bed and of himself wearing bras and panties. When he finally left, he took the underwear as trophies. In 82 documented burglaries, William stole around 1,400 pieces of women's clothing. Most of it was underwear or lingerie. So none of Russell's Tweed victims reported break-ins to the police. Some weren't even aware at the time that their homes had been violated or hadn't noticed anything missing. However, 15 of the 25 Orleans families whose homes were broken into reported the crimes to the Ottawa Police Department. Undercover officers were posted to watch Wilkie drive, but without results. Detective Sergeant Jim Van Allen, a criminal profiler with the Ontario Provincial Police, assessed the information on the Orleans break-ins and deduced that as the intruder continued to evade detection, he was becoming more aggressive. In one home, he had left a taunting message on a computer, and in another, police found semen on a photograph of a woman. Van Allen concluded that the prowler posed an increasing danger for a hands-on sexual assault. As Van Allen warned, the dangerous nature of the crimes had escalated. Two women in Tweed were attacked in September 2009. Jane Doe, her real name was protected by a publication ban here in Canada, on the 17th, and Lori Massicotti on the 30th. Both women were asleep when Williams broke in. Both were bound and blindfolded, assaulted, and forced to pose nude for photographs. In both cases, the victims called the police, but only after the Massicotti attack did the OPP advise the public. Constables went door to door in search of the information that might lead them to the prowler that everybody was calling the Tweed Creeper. Court records showed that Russell was involved in 82 fetish-related home invasions and attempted break-ins between September 2007 and November 2009, as he indulged in his pedophiliac tendencies, stealing the underwear of girls as young as 9 years old. He evolved to a sexual assault on September 17, 2009. Like I said, when he broke into a woman's home near Tweed, Ontario, after returning from a trip to the remote Canadian Forces base in Alert, Nunavut, the previous day. He tied her to a chair, sexually assaulted her, and photographed her naked body. Russell Williams spent the rest of the week attending a military parade, playing in a golf tournament, and grinning for a photo with minor hockey players. His second sexual assault transpired on September 30th, similar to the previous attack. Russell Williams was photographed 2 days after the incident, presenting a donation to his wife's charity organization.
What I remember, I went to the bedroom, and as I went to my dresser to get, you know, change of clothes, I noticed that the bedside drawers, the little tables by the bed, the drawers were open.
And she was just inside the door of the office, about two paces in, holding her hands like this, looking at the screen.
It was the screen of an old computer that was rarely used. It had been turned on, the screensaver disabled, and replaced by a chilling message. In large letters, it said, "Go ahead, call the police. I want to show the judge your really big dildos."
Honestly, it's the first time I ever had the hair stand up on the back of my neck, because it was right out of Hollywood. It was right out of Hollywood.
Then Marcin Cook checked her bedroom.
And then that's when I saw that my drawers, my underwear drawers, my two drawers were both open and empty. And that's when I lost it.
I screamed. The first big scream came when she opened up the one drawer, and then she shakingly, she opened up the other drawer, and then the other big, and then she was a wreck.
A wreck, because she realized then that someone must have been in the house when she was the night before. Someone who'd come for her, who'd hidden in the closet, then typed that message, unlocked the kitchen deadbolt, and left.
So could you imagine? That is absolutely disturbing. Like, I don't even know what I would do. How terrible. Based on video evidence found inside his house, Russell staked out the home of Corporal Marie-France Como, who was a 37-year-old military traffic technician based at CFB Trenton, so she worked at the same place that Russell worked. On the night of November 23, 2009, in Brighton, a town that was just west of Trenton, Russell first broke into the house at around 9 p.m. and posed, wearing Marie's undergarments, before breaking in again between 10:30 and 11 p.m., he hid in the basement before attacking her when she went downstairs to call her cat. He would end up raping her multiple times and videotaping the whole ordeal. After trying to suffocate her with a pillow, he duct taped her nose, and she died of asphyxiation. He wrapped her body in a duvet and left it in her bedroom, where it lay undiscovered for more than 30 hours. While police searched Comeau's home for clues following the discovery, Russell sent personal condolences to her father. What a monster. On January 27, 2010, Russell noticed Jessica Lloyd, a 27-year-old single female who was on her treadmill through her window at her apartment. He ended up breaking into her home to confirm she lived alone before entering again on January 28th while she was asleep. Just like Marie, he tied Jessica up and blindfolded her with duct tape. He photographed her throughout the assault and videotaped him raping her multiple times. Afterwards, he bundled her into his truck and took her to his weekend getaway cottage in Tweeds, where he raped her again. Russell killed Jessica by striking her in the head with a flashlight and strangling her with a rope. He ended up burying her in a shallow grave in a secluded area on Carey Road, a few miles away from his cottage on January 29th. So I should say that he had to leave, so he left Jessica's body wrapped in that duvet in his garage. He left and he went to spend the weekend with his wife, and then he came back and took Jessica's body out to Carey Road and didn't even really bury her. He just left her out there. So Jessica was reported missing when she didn't show up for work and wasn't at home, though her car was there. Police responded quickly, and investigators from the OPP and the Belleville Police Department suspected that a sexual assault and suspected that the sexual assaults in Tweed, the Comeau murder, and Jessica's disappearance were all connected. A massive search was launched. It included personnel and search and rescue aircraft from CFP Trenton, authorized by none other than Colonel Russell Williams. Despite the efforts of police and hundreds of volunteers, after a week, there was no trace of Jessica at all. However, witnesses had reported seeing a silver-colored SUV parked in a field near Jessica's house on the night of her disappearance. Police found tire tracks whose distinctive tread narrowed the range of potential suspect vehicles to a few, including a Nissan Pathfinder. On the evening of February 4th, Russell was stopped at an OPP checkpoint on Highway 37. While appearing to be looking for drunk drivers, officers asked occupants of the vehicles questions pertinent to the search for Jessica and examined tires. Russell said he was in a hurry because he had a sick child at home. Remember, Russell didn't have any children. During the brief roadside interrogation, officers saw that the tread on Russell's tires matched those found in the field, and from that moment, Russell was under police surveillance. So suspicion mounted when police realized that Russell had lied about his sick child. On the afternoon of February 7th, Russell went to the Ottawa Police Headquarters at the request of OPP Detective Sergeant Jim Smith, who said he had a few loose ends to tie up. And about Jim Smith, if you remember back, we talked about Tori Stafford. This is the same detective that investigated and did the interrogation of Terry Lynn McClintock and Michael Rafferty as well. So once Russell was in the interrogation room, Smith confronted him with questions for which he had no satisfactory answers. Russell was wearing the same boots he had worn the night of Jessica's disappearance, which were matched to footprints found in the snow outside of her house. I want to play a little bit of the interrogation audio for you here.
I guess the closest to interview by NIS for top secret clearance.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, again, Russell, I appreciate you coming in an investigation like this. I mean, I'm sure you can appreciate it's been big news, especially down Belleville way. And, you know, obviously our approach to cases like this is that we don't give up on somebody being alive until we get evidence that they're not. So because of that, we're treating Jessica's case as an emergent situation, obviously. Yeah. So we're fast forwarding things that we might normally take our time with. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're here on a Sunday afternoon. Sure. So again, I appreciate it. Okay. We're going to do a pretty thorough interview today. Okay. And the reason for that is because the last thing we want is to be calling people back again and again and again. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we're going to go over a number of things, and I'm going to explain what all those are to you. Okay. I'm a big coffee guy. I don't know if you're a coffee guy or not, but I didn't want to drink in front of you. So
no, I appreciate it.
Sorry, what, sorry?
Gum.
Just oh, okay. Gum. Well, there's napkins there if you want to toss it or whatever.
I appreciate that.
All right. And again, like I said, this interview is going to be very thorough. Mm-hmm. But again, I have a simple rule when I talk to people. It's I'm sure you're the same way. I treat everybody with respect. I don't know why I ask if they do the same for me. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off by going through what your rights are. Okay.
Okay.
Just like everybody else. Okay. Have you ever been read your rights before?
No.
I'm sure you've seen it on TV a whole bunch of times, but that's usually the American version. So
okay.
I'll go over with you briefly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Basically in Canada, as you know, I'm sure is we all have our rights guaranteed under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Right.
Okay. Now, Russell, just to avoid any confusion, because people do get confused when they're talked to by the police, is mm-hmm. that you're obviously not under arrest here today. Okay.
Yep.
Anytime you feel you want to leave here, you feel free to do so. The door's not locked. Teresa will walk you down the lobby anytime you want. Okay.
Okay.
If there's anything that comes up in our interview today, Russell, that that you feel you want to talk to a lawyer about,
sure.
You just let me know. Okay.
Sure.
And the reason for that is I want to explain to you exactly what's going on here. Okay. Jessica Lloyd is one of four cases that we're currently investigating. Okay.
Right.
And essentially what's happened is over the past about 4 or 5 months,
yeah.
There have been four occurrences that, like I said, that we're looking into. Mm-hmm. Two of those occurrences occurred in September of 2009.
Yeah.
And very briefly, they were up in the Tweed area.
Yeah.
They involved somebody entering two different women's houses
mm-hmm.
In the evening hours and committing sexual acts.
Yeah.
Okay. November of 2009,
yeah.
A young lady by the name of Marie-France Como was found murdered in her home in Brighton.
Yeah.
And we believe that there was a sexual component to that crime as well.
Okay.
And then most recently, we have Jessica Lloyd's disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So essentially, when you're looking at those kind of crimes, we're looking at a number of different potential criminal charges. All right.
Absolutely.
This is a photocopy of the boot that you took off your foot just a little while ago, okay? Now, I'm not an expert in footwear impressions, so I rely on the experts. Footwear impressions are very much like fingerprint comparisons, okay? You take a look at this print, and again, this is one print. This person walked through, there's several different prints to compare.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna get features off of one print to compare, features off another print to compare.
Yeah.
These are identical. Okay. Your vehicle drove up the side of Jessica Lloyd's house. Your boots walked to the back of Jessica Lloyd's house on the evening of the 28th and 29th of January. Okay. You want discretion. We need to have some honesty, okay? Because this is getting out of control really fast, Russell. Really, really fast. This is getting beyond my control. All right. I came in here a few hours ago and I called you the way I called you today because I wanted to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I both know you were at Jessica Lloyd's house and I need to know why. Russell, you know there's only one option. What other option is there?
What's the option?
Well, I don't think you want the cold-blooded psychopath option. I might be wrong. Because okay? Don't get me wrong, I've met guys who actually kind of enjoyed the notoriety, got off on it, got off on having that label, Bernardo being one of them. I don't see that in you. If I saw that in you, I wouldn't be back in here talking to you, quite frankly. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you got me fooled. I don't know. This is over. And it can have a bad ending where Jessica's parents continue to wonder where her daughter's lying. Is Jessica somewhere we can find her easily? Like, is this something where I can make a call and tell somebody to go to a location and they're going to find her? Or is this something where we have to go and take a walk? which direction are we heading in here? Did we talk?
I want to minimize the impact on my wife.
So do I.
So how do we do that?
Well, we start by telling the truth.
Okay.
Okay. So where is she?
Get a map.
How long has she been there for?
A little over a week.
Was it fairly quick from the time she left?
Friday night.
Friday night?
Yeah.
So where was she between Thursday night and Friday night?
In Tweed.
With you?
Yeah.
How long was she alive for?
Almost 24 hours, not quite.
Okay. Russ? Okay.
Particular.
Well, what did they hit on the back of the head do?
Well, I was surprised at her skull gave way. She was there and immediately unconscious. I strangled her.
Okay. What did you hit her with?
Flashlight.
Okay. In the house or outside the house?
In the house. Yeah, they'll find signs of that.
Where in the house did this happen?
In the main portion, just in front of the fireplace.
What do you mean they'll find signs of it?
Oh, there's quite a bit of blood. I hadn't expected. I'd expected to knock her out. Obviously generated a lot of blood.
What did she bleed onto?
The floor. It's just a tile floor.
Okay. Did you clean it up or did you?
I wiped it up. I know it'll be easily spotted.
What makes you think that? Like, if I walked in that house right now,
you wouldn't see it, not at all, but the right science will show it, I'm sure.
Okay. So when that happened, did she have clothes on or was she naked?
She was dressed.
Okay. So when we find her, is she going to have those clothes on too?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Marie France, Como.
There was an open window in the basement of her house when she was away. I went in there a couple of nights before she came home. Looked around. I went back in there late at night when she was at home. She was on the phone in her bedroom. She actually discovered me in the basement. She was trying to get her cat to come upstairs, and the cat was in the basement, had seen me and was fixated on me in the corner. She couldn't get the cat up, so she came downstairs trying to get the cat, and I'm not more sure why she came over to me. I guess the cat was staring at me, and she was wondering what the cat was staring at. Lights were on. So when she spotted me, I had the same flashlight. I subdued her. Tied her up, brought her upstairs. strangled her later in the morning? Well, or suffocated her. Right. Some tape. Left her there.
How did you subdue her? And when you say subdued her in the basement, what did you do?
Well, I had the same flashlight. And, she saw me right away. So it was just, I hit her a couple of times and around her head, try and knock her out. Didn't, but she was bleeding a little bit. Eventually, her struggle subdued her.
Okay. Any blood from that struggle?
Oh, yeah. No, not a whole bunch, but flashlight did break her skin a couple of times.
Okay. What area of the basement did that take place in?
I was hiding behind the furnace, so she spotted me right there.
Okay. Did she recognize you?
No, I had stuff on my face.
Okay. So you go upstairs, and you said she suffocated?
Well, I suffocated her. I put tape on her. I put tape on her mouth, and then I put tape on her nose and held it there so she couldn't breathe.
Okay. What kind of tape was it?
Duct tape.
What happened to it?
Well, I took it with me and can't remember what actually I did with that tape, but probably threw it in the garbage.
Did you use tape for any other purposes?
No.
Okay. Did she ever recognize you through this whole episode? No. What did you say you had on your face?
I had just a cover for my head, just to, pullover type, like just a little cap kind of thing.
Okay.
Just a wicker or something. And they, just a headband over my nose and mouth. So it covered most everything but my eyes.
Okay. Now this flashlight, where is that now?
In tweed.
In the house?
Yeah.
What kind of flashlight is it?
It's a red 3DD. I'm not sure what brand it is, but it's a metal, one of these aluminum. It's like a big I can't remember what brand of aircraft aluminum flashlights are ACLR. Anyway, it's a bigger one of those.
Did you take anything out of Marie Frances' house or Jessica Lloyd's house?
Yeah, some of their underwear.
So while the interview was in progress, officers with search warrants were going through the cottage in Tweed and through Russell's Ottawa home in the presence of his shocked wife. Smith periodically left the interrogation room to get updates from the search teams, which provided him with more damning facts. And after a lengthy interrogation, Russell finally gave it up. When Smith asked, "All right, so where is she?" Russell simply replied, "You got a map. The searches of William's property turned up his camera, duffel bag containing a black skull cap, a manual for lock picking, and boxes of pillowcases stuffed with underwear and lingerie. Hidden in the basement ceiling of the Ottawa house were two computer hard drives containing expertly concealed records of Russell's activities as a sexual predator over a two-year period. Video clips and nearly 3,000 photographs included depictions of the Tweed assaults and murders of Marie and Jessica. There were also detailed accounts of his break-ins and meticulously compiled inventory of all items that he had stolen. So the news of Russell Williams' arrest and his bizarre double life stunned everyone who knew him and absolutely shocked the public. You got to think, this guy was the top of our Air Force, Colonel Russell Williams. So in court in Belleville on February 8th, Russell was charged with murder, sexual assault, and forcible confinement. He would later be charged with numerous counts of break and enter. He spent the next 8 months in the Quinte Detention Center in Napanee, from which he made several court appearances via video link. Because Russell pleaded guilty to all the charges, he was not put on trial. During the Easter weekend in April 2010, guards prevented Russell from choking to death on a cardboard toilet paper tube that he had shoved down his throat. He was subsequently kept under 24-hour watch. On October 27, 2010, Russell was sentenced to two life terms with no possibility of parole for 25 years. He was also registered as a sex offender. His Nissan Pathfinder and his hoard of stolen garments were destroyed. Obviously, Russell was inevitably stripped of his rank and dismissed from the Canadian Forces. His uniform was burned and his decorations were destroyed. Russell's wife claimed to know nothing about her husband's crimes, began divorce proceedings immediately, and Russell is now incarcerated in the maximum security prison at Port Cartier in Quebec. So in the wake of the criminal convictions, two multi-million dollar civil lawsuits were filed against Russell and his wife, one by the Jane Doe and the other by the family of Jessica Lloyd. They were settled with undisclosed financial payments in 2014. A third lawsuit filed by Lori Massicotti targeted not only Russell and his wife, but also the Ontario Provincial Police. She accused of failing to warn Tweed residents about a predator in their town and for suggesting that she made a false copycat claim when she reported her assault to police. The OPP settled out of court with her in 2015, but as of 2016, her lawsuit against Russell and his wife was still active. So after his confession, like mentioned before, his houses were searched. His collection of stolen underwear ran into the thousands. He had so much of it, he had to burn some of it in a field outside of Ottawa. Adding to his audacious crimes was a condolence letter like he had written to Marie's family after her body was discovered, offering to help during this difficult time. Like, could you, like, what an absolute monster. So again, Russell pleaded guilty to all 88 charges against him, including those two counts of first degree murder, two counts of sexual assault, two counts of forcible confinement, and then 82 counts of breaking and attempted infringement on October 18, 2010. So obviously, that's what it is. And his sentences are concurrent. So they're, his life sentences are to be served concurrent. So at the same time, but then he got two 10-year sentences for the other sexual assaults and two 10-year sentences for the forcible confinements and 82 one-year sentences for burglary. So I guess safe to say he's not going to get out on parole. But again, it's just the verbiage of the whole conviction and the whole sentence. No parole for 25 years. It's just silly to me. The military also retrieved his Southwest Asia Service Medal with the Afghanistan Bar and Canadian Forces decoration with a clasp and commission scroll. Like I said before, he is serving his sentence in Quebec, and there he will rot until the day he takes his final pathetic, depraved breath.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and share with your friends. If you don't mind giving us a 5-star rating, it will help our show grow. You can also find us on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram at True Crime Story Podcast, where the discussion can continue. If you wish to contact us, you may do so via email at truecrimestorypod@gmail.com. Remember to send in your podcast episodes, case suggestions, or requests. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the show. I'm Bree.
And I'm Char.
And we'll see you in the next chapter.